Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Christmas is coming and the Football Ramble and audible.co.uk would like to give you a present. Be it I, Partridge, We Need to Talk About Alan by Alan Partridge, or The Lost World by Michael Crichton, you can claim a free audiobook on us. To claim it, just go to audible.co.uk/footballramble and sign up for a free 1 month trial with no obligation to continue. Merry Christmas.
It's Christmas!
Merry Christmas to each and every one of you listening to this. My name is Marcus, you're listening to the Football Ramble. I've got Jim to my left.
Hello.
Pete's opposite me.
I'm Monday at the Batch again.
And Luke is to my right.
All right.
Nice to have you back, Lukey.
Thank you, nice to be back.
Great stuff. You were about to say something, Pete.
I'm about to slag him off a bit. Continue. There'll be ample opportunity later, I'm sure.
Yeah, there will.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Worth pointing out, Pete's just cut his tongue on a Sharpie.
Yeah.
So
it's a kind of pen for people who don't have Sharpies.
Ryan Giggs was asked what he would buy Sir Alex Ferguson for Christmas. He said, what would I buy the manager? He likes singing around the place. So maybe a karaoke machine for when he gets home. So he's singing there rather than at the training ground, Jim.
Fanta, isn't it?
I wonder what he sings.
It's that wit that's fueled such a long and healthy career.
It's very odd though, isn't it?
On and off. Away. On the pitch.
Yeah.
On the pitch. Up them Gangnam Style.
Is that Alex Ferguson doing Gangnam Style?
Yes, it
is. Brian Clough was famously another one who used to love a sing song.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he?
Used to be Bell Sinatra. Or Frank Sinatra in the office and stuff.
Yeah. Well, okay then. If you had to buy a Premier League manager. A Premier League manager.
We'll do it my way.
A Christmas present.
I'm the best New Yorker.
Which manager would you buy for and what would you get
Marcus,
him?
Get them in order, will you?
Didn't happen when you weren't here.
No. Rain us in, Marcus.
Jim, answer the question.
Sure enough, Rain to Lukey.
I would get Sam Allardyce, a onesie.
Gravy. Oh.
That'd be a onesie.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's made entirely of some sort of bib material. Because, again, you know, coming back to gravy, as you mentioned it, I imagine gravy sort of splashback is a big, big problem for Allardyce.
And
Christmas dinner in the Allardyce house is going to be a big thing, isn't it? I imagine they put away the usual dinner trough and have like a sort of special pit for the
golden
dinner.
Pit.
I was even a pit way, that they put him down.
Well, he'll go in it, obviously. Yeah. So basically, if he's got this onesie, he can just sort of swim around in his dinner because there'll be so much of it and so much gravy. And it'll be sort of heat-proof as well. Probably get him a mask.
So much gravy would be Sam Allardyce's band.
I don't know how he's going to... I don't know how he's going to stand the temperatures, but he won't mind.
It sounds a bit like Silence of the Lambs, this.
There'll be lamb involved.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like maybe...
Too much gravy.
Don't you have like a bird within a bird within a bird? Don't they try and do that? But it'd be like a trough within a trough within a trough. Until the trough's so small, it's like sucking food out of a Smarty tube in a sewer.
Could you, now he's at West Ham, could you see him having jellied eels?
I don't think he stops to taste things.
Jelly makes it slide down quicker.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that what it's for?
Melting the gravy.
Okay, so Sam Allardyce and what Jim said. Pete.
Can I buy something for Alex Ferguson?
Yes.
Like a second present?
Yeah, of course,
I was thinking of getting him like a nice bottle of Chilean Merlot. He'll start to drink it because he loves his red wine.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it'll actually be Farmer's Red Diesel and it'll burn his mouth off. He won't be able to sing and also no more hairdryer treatment as well.
Yeah. It'll be fire breathing treatment.
Yeah. I thought I'd end the, you know, the start the show and indeed end the year with an old man's burnt mouth. So, Merry Christmas.
Typical.
I mean, Allardyce would get a burnt mouth in my one as well if he wasn't careful.
Yeah. No, because...
I can imagine. No, but he's built up a resistance.
True.
Also, then there would be some kind of fan system which Richard O'Brien would start before he jumped in.
Just saying, it's odd that we've had two burnt mouths so far.
Yeah. Well,
we didn't even talk to each other before this.
Luke.
We don't generally.
It comes to something where I have to look to you, Luke, for a bit of sanity.
I'm roughly trying to think of one that involves a burnt mouth. No, I was going to go a little bit more friendly.
Uh huh.
and say, I'll get Chris Hughton a nice bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
Well done, son.
Yeah.
The manager of the month competition.
What a run they're on. Mm-hmm. Playing well. From what I can make out, the fixture list looks like a little bit more unkind to them. So mm. over the festive period, mm. so maybe take stock, smell the roses in the garden, have a glass of champagne. Mm. Yeah, give
and
a glass.
Give
to,
up.
Give a glass to Sir Alex. Cool his mouth down a bit, and just enjoy it. Not give up. Just enjoy it.
So, what are they like seventh or eighth now?
Doing very well.
So they ain't going to go down from there, are they?
Chris Hughton, bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
Delia's probably
hauntingly average
one.
Compared to what the other two said.
Well, I just thought we needed to get back to a bit of normality back.
Just saying right. as well, Delia's probably going to get him a better one.
She'll get him a lovely bottle of champagne.
And it'll be slathered in mustard, so another burnt mouth for the manager.
I'd get Sir Alex Ferguson a linesman's flag, so he can actually officially make the decisions.
Why is he going to burn his mouth on that?
Yeah. Yeah. Idiot.
Laced with acid.
Stupid answer.
Why does Alex Ferguson get so many presents?
Wish you didn't turn up.
I've got the points. let's go on to the Premier League. Where Queen's Park Rangers have won a game.
Yay.
Oh, the first one of the season. And Tarat with two goals. What about the second one, Jim? Bloody hell, fire.
Absolutely beautiful.
Here is the bell for QPR. They won a game.
Yeah, I've told you you're not allowed that. No, yeah. It doesn't stay on the table. It stays over there.
The bell
there
ends.
You go.
This is the last show of the year, gentlemen.
Yeah, no, it was a beautiful goal, wasn't it? Proper, like, it was a flash git special.
Yes.
But to be able to pull it off was
effortless,
wonderful.
Effortless. Mm. When he plays like that, he's absolutely delightful.
Yeah, so often he's effortless in the wrong way.
Yeah. Is that the Redknapp effect?
Well, yeah, it literally is, isn't it?
It really
because,
is.
Well, he's moved him sort of in the middle, play him just behind the striker, much more effective. Because Mark Hughes seemed to play him quite out on the left.
Well, that's because Warnock did.
When he did pick him. And I've heard, like, under Warnock, apparently, on Tuesdays at training at QPR, Warnock used to say to Tarat, Adele, right, do you want to get yourself off now? I'll see you Saturday. Because apparently he's so disruptive.
Yeah.
And you maybe only get like an hour out of him because he's so unfit. But they used to play. He's good.
But when they were in the Championship, they played a 4-3-3 with him on the left.
Yeah, he doesn't even have to try in the Championship, does he?
No, of course not. And if he came back in, he would get a fine if he came back into the QPR half.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just stay out there.
Okay, right.
So you're there for goals.
Hang on, what about for like corners? Why would he be allowed
Well, okay, maybe that might be the exception.
Right.
I'd love that.
It'd be hard
that.
To police.
Well, yeah, it would be, yeah. Warnock would do it, though. But it was a fabulous win, though. They looked pretty good.
Mm. I think the really interesting thing was when Fulham got their goal back in injury time, the panic that set in QPR's players, you could see it on all of them. Sean Wright Phillips almost like in tears on the bench, like, it's happening again. But they rode it out.
I love the very idea of a player being so mentally fragile that when they get a goal back they actually cry. Arsenal, I've seen Arsenal do it.
Yeah.
Rob Green played really well.
He did. I was about to say.
Early on there was a quite tight quick cross and he just full stretch just grabbed it and brought it to his chest. Lovely.
And that really set his stall out. If he had dropped that, yeah. He's going
to
be a
and he's liable to do that.
But the other thing is
that the Redknapp effect?
Tarat will be key for them, but the problem is I think they're about to lose him to the African Cup of Nations, aren't they? He'll go with Morocco, I think.
Well, has he actually agreed to do that? I know he was weighing it up.
Well, the latest I've heard is that he's probably going to be called up and he will go. So I suppose he could change his mind. That's down to Redknapp, isn't it, I suppose?
Indeed it is. If there's one man who can lock someone in
but
the house.
They've needed this so much, haven't they? They've needed a win to sort of bond them as a squad and go, right, this is what we do now. This is our platform to build on. Because until you get that, it's just disappointment after disappointment. And they've all got to be questioning what we're doing here.
Especially against local
down,
rivals
surely.
As well.
Yeah, but when you get that little bit of momentum and you realise you can do it.
But Redknapp was almost saying, wasn't he? There was no point going for a draw. There's no point playing any sort of trying to shore it up or anything like that against anyone because we need to win so badly.
Well, they've had a few points, a couple of them away from home. Which a confidence boost is not losing, and you get Fulham home. Fulham aren't doing very well at all, aren't they?
Very little concentration at the back, really strange.
But QPR they're away at Newcastle next, aren't they? I think so. It's going to be tough for them.
I'm glad they've got the win out the way, to be fair. Too. Well, they're just searching for the win.
You wonder, like, because I'm just going to fix this now. Then they're at home to West Brom, then at home to Liverpool, then away to Chelsea. So it's not getting it much easier for them. So that was so important to get that win. And everyone's talking about how they're a write off and how they're definitely going to get relegated. But with that one win, they're off the bottom. I mean, I know Reading play Arsenal at the time of recording, so we don't know how they're going to get on. But I mean, they're not too far away. They're 5 points adrift or something like that. So it's not too bad.
It's been done.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Sheffield United were in exactly the same situation and they finished 13th in the end.
And honestly, all sort of personal prejudice aside, if you could pick one manager in the Premier League to keep him up, it'd be Redknapp. There's no one else you'd choose. You wouldn't pick anyone else at all, bar none. So they've got the right manager in there and they've got loads of players and they've got a transfer window. Those three things are going to be make sure I think they'll be okay.
There's your reasons, doubters.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned they're playing Newcastle. They lost at home 3-1 to Manchester City. City were excellent in the first half.
Mm.
Should have been a few more up. But then Newcastle did play well, didn't they, Pete?
I really enjoyed the match.
Didn't they do well?
I really enjoyed the match. It was fun. Newcastle had a couple of spells where really pinned them back. Man City looked a bit daft at the back as well. It was really, really strange. I think the CC miss was kind of key for Newcastle. Yeah, Alex Mathie would have scored that.
He's damn right.
I thought Anita played well.
Yeah, quick. Looked quick when he was covering for Coloccini's slow legs.
Because you sort of feared for him. Because I wondered if he was ever going to make the adjustment. But he seems to sort of be doing.
Well, he was kind of. Everyone sort of thought he was going to be replacing Tiote when he shuffles away. But it turns out he's not really that sort of player. He's kind of like more like he's slightly more forward. He's a little bit more pacey. He kind of fills in for Kabay a lot. Like when Perch fills in for Tiote, and he looks really, really good.
Well, should Newcastle play Bar and CC up front, one behind the other?
Newcastle should sell Bar to Arsenal. We know this.
Bar was shameless with that today in the press. Arsenal know the situation. They know my release clause. We just have to wait and see.
Yeah,
but I think that's not. I think that's coming from a lot of like Arsenal forums and stuff. Yeah. I'm almost certain.
Well, it's obvious, like sort of just amateur detective work, isn't it? Bar's got the release clause. Arsenal seemingly need a striker. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone needs a release striker.
Exactly.
Big news. Newcastle have also cancelled their Christmas party, haven't they?
They have, yeah. Pardew said it's not fitting.
Few people have done that.
And QPR.
QPR as well.
Fair enough. Newcastle haven't been that bad, though, have they?
But it's not necessarily. I would argue it's not necessarily the players' faults. I think some of the decisions.
Christmas came too early.
Sammy Amiobi will turn up anyway. On his own for ages.
Sammy Amiobi is having a Christmas party every day of his life. Exactly. In his onesie.
He'll be at the bar with his onesie, literally wondering where everyone is.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Still having a brilliant time.
Tweeting #lol. This is brilliant party.
So yeah, Pete, you were actually making a serious point before that got derailed, or was it?
Bar and Cissé.
I didn't like
that front. That front Bar and Cissé.
I think it's one of those things where I think you got who is more invested in the club, probably Cissé. So you need to find someone to play with Cissé rather than the other way around. I think that's fair to say. But again, when Cissé looks bad, he looks really bad.
Yeah.
He's that Andy Cole kind of look about him, where if he misses, it's like, oh, you've really fucked up.
He had a chance.
And he's offside a lot of the time as well.
He had a chance against City, which he really snatched, put it over the bar. And you remember thinking back in the day when he first signed, he put it that way.
These things happen to strikers. You can have a half a season off. If he starts firing again in January, they're both
all
there.
Will
they're,
be
both, they're both not there for the African Cup of Nations, of course, because they didn't qualify. No. But we're losing Tiote, of course, for a month. So.
Tiote was like that player you have in your seven-a-side team that just shoots from anywhere.
But like people actually actively campaign for him to shoot more when he scored like one goal from that like kind
of
area.
I remember it well.
against Arsenal, and precious little other than that.
Jim, would you reckon that Wenger would be tempted just to chuck a little Shamak sweetener into the Denver Bar deal, into the Denver Bar?
Didn't they announce it today how much he spent on Jovino? It was like something 12 million,
like 8 million, I think.
Was it 8 million? Yeah. Okay, right.
Yeah. Still, it's £8 million
for Jovino.
If you take like a second to take yourself out of the sort of football sphere and think about how much £8 million actually is.
Yeah. Staggering.
Fuck all in it.
Yeah, you end up killing yourself. You can't think of those numbers, that sort of player. It's unbelievable. Mm.
Well, let's go back to some lower numbers. And it was another 3-1 in the Premier League, and it was Aston Villa.
That's significant. That's who's, 31.
Who got three goals at Anfield.
Oh, that was
so
brilliant.
Liverpool's won.
Yeah.
Liverpool's won. What a win. What a bloody win. Now, Villa.
What a back heel.
What a back at Benteke was absolutely superb.
He was, yeah.
We talked about Villa, not had the best of seasons so far. Recently they've done okay, but Liverpool have had a couple of good results. You'd have looked at that and thought that's a home win.
Absolutely.
But no.
It started looking like it was going to be a home win. Villa were all over the place at the back, but they just shored it up. They woke up. Obviously you're getting used to playing badly and sort of identifying how it's happening during the matches. It was they stepped it up so brilliantly. It was three great goals. Yeah, they were magnificent goals. Really brilliant to watch. But it was
sort of half an hour,
very much so. But it was reminiscent of how Lambert had Norwich playing last season, just on the deck, knocking it around.
It's just
really
going
to
take him a bit of time. Absolutely. As soon as they get a bit more experience in them, and Benteke looks like a really good all-round striker. Yeah. Now,
I mean, it's the same. There's four teams in the Premier League having this, which is Liverpool under Rodgers, Norwich under Houghton, Villa under Lambert, and Swansea under Loudrup. So sort of they're all kind of coming together under their new manager styles because it takes a while.
Yeah,
I think I know Villa deserve a lot of credit because even with the state sort of Liverpool have been in recently in very much a transitional phase, it's still going to Anfield. It's difficult to go and win there.
Oh yeah.
And although Liverpool were poor last season at home, they didn't lose that many games, they just didn't win that many. And so it's still a big thing for a young pro to go to Anfield, I imagine, to try and win. So it's a big
to go 3-0 up there as well.
I maintain, though, by the way, that, I mean, Liverpool aren't going to have a transfer window as quiet as they did in August, in January. They're going to sign players, and they're certainly going to sign a striker. And as soon as they can sign a striker who can actually put a pair of scoring boots on, they're going to do a lot better.
Let's talk of Sturridge, isn't there?
I mean, he'd be a great signing for them. He'd be perfect. Yeah. Really would. Because I'm a big fan of Sturridge. I just think he needs to play. If he plays through the middle consistently and knows at the back of his mind that he gets 5 or 6 games, whatever happens, he's in the team, he'll start firing.
And
really
the difference between Liverpool and the teams around them in the league, they can attract players just from their name.
Always. Especially from overseas. Yeah.
We're still with David Villa as well, which I think is unlikely. But, you know, clearly the wheels are in motion for them.
I mean, at least when it's a team like Liverpool, and again, like I said, they're in a transitional phase, David Villa is going to look at them and go, well, they've won the European Cup final times.
I'm 31
it's
now.
It's a decent draw, you know what I mean? Yeah, absolutely. And I saw Liverpool Villa most of it anyway. I wasn't that fearful for Liverpool after that game because they've been playing okay. They had that one defeat against Spurs, but other than that, they've had a couple of wins. I think they're going to be all right.
They did really well against West Ham to dig in and get that win.
Absolutely, yeah, because they went behind, didn't they? And they pulled it back, absolutely.
Liverpool is a good draw. Another draw in the Premier League was Stoke City 1, Everton 1, Jim.
A lot of violence in that game.
There was a hell of a lot of violence, all from Fellaini on Shawcross. I mean, he really wanted to do him, didn't he?
He just, like, almost gradually beat him up.
Yeah. the first headbutt was a real proper one. And then
none of your sort of football, sort of, like, you know, he's forehead rubbing. It was an actual... you know, nut. He cracked him.
I genuinely think Fellaini expected to be sent off for it, because what do you say after that?
Yeah,
he's the man who's marking. Yeah, so you both know what you've just done. Yeah. You've just got to have a conversation with him for the rest of the match. Going, you just headbutted me, and they didn't say you're going to get in big trouble.
I think he probably just thought, oh, I've got to keep doing this now.
Yeah, or maybe he just thought, oh, I'm immune. I'm allowed to just hit this guy.
The rules have changed.
I've got an invisibility ring. It was strange.
I found his, like, apology really strange as well. He's like, what can I say? I lost my temper. Well, you didn't lose your temper. You did it about 4 different times. It wasn't like a flashpoint incident.
It was 40 minute
you lost
rage
your temper
moment.
For 40
to be fair though, like, players had their arms around Fellaini from, like, the first minute.
It's going to be a difficult game, isn't it?
But what annoys me is Fellaini's one of the few players in the Premier League, in any league in the world, who can actually play when there's someone's arms around, because he's so imposing.
Absolutely.
He could play wearing a cupboard, that man.
I'd like to see it. One of the biggest problems, you know, it's difficult for referees at the moment, and it will get even more difficult for them because the game's faster and all that sort of stuff. But one of the reasons it's difficult is because players consistently try and referee the game themselves. And that's a classic example of that. You can't, and I'm not saying he's saying this, but he did sort of make a sort of mealy-mouthed apology. He didn't sort of say, oh, I'm sorry for doing this, it was stupid, I don't know why I did it. He was like, oh, I lost my temper for a bit. And you can't use the excuse that someone's got his arms around you for doing that. You've got to let the referee the game, you've got to carry on with it.
Moyes' stance was good, though.
Yeah, well, he's got 3-match ban only for that. He's effectively got what he would have got if he got sent off of violent conduct, which is 3 games.
Well, what I think is total bollocks is what people are saying in the press, which is it's Fellaini agitating for a move, trying to make his position untenable.
I've never seen that before. Mind you, work for Joey Barton, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but
there is talk of
Joey DeLauren to himself.
There's talk of what Moyes is. I think people are saying is that because Moyes is so good at doing this sort of thing, where he sells a player on for a big amount of money, then reinvests it in several new players. I think that's maybe what people are saying he's going to do, because Chelsea are after him apparently. And they've talked to like 30 million or something. So,
Well, now with
I don't know how true it is,
but that really is an option for a manager like Moyes at a club like Everton, with the staggering amounts of money with Manchester City and Chelsea, most notably in the Premier League. You can sell a player like Fellaini. Fellaini's probably worth... you don't know what he's worth nowadays.
Yeah, but how much was he signed for? 12, 15 million?
15 million it was. They did sign him for a lot.
He signed a 5-year contract last year as well.
But you could get 30 million for him or something, of course. That, which of course is...
Well, look what he did with Rodwell, and Rodwell's how they play.
They might as well loan Rodwell back.
Why not, eh? Right, let's move on to the Championship. We've been there for a little while, but we're going there now. And Cardiff sensationally got beaten by Peterborough at home. 2-1, the bottom of the league side beat the top of the league side. Cardiff still 2 points clear, but...
Typical Red Dragons.
That's an incredible result, though, isn't it?
It is, really.
We got told off for belittling the red shirts when they used to be the Bluebirds last week.
Did we?
Yeah.
By who?
Some Cardiff fans said that we shouldn't belittle the fact they've had their shirts changed from blue to red.
We're very much on the side of Cardiff.
Yeah, I know, we covered it quite extensively back in the day.
Who said that? Some Cardiff fans.
The posh. the posh got
Darren Ferguson. I'll tell you what, I'm pleased they got a result. It's a great win for them at Cardiff. Yeah. Cardiff had won 10 out of 10, hadn't they, before that? 100% home record. Ferguson in the post match though, he was so smug. he actually said given that his team were bottom of the table, he actually said, I just had a little feeling we were going to win today, you know, a little week to the press. I bet you did. I bet you did every week, but you're bottom. So you can't say that now.
I've had that feeling for a wee while.
Arrogance does not look good on that face.
And it's been
nothing.
It's been wrong. It's been wrong every time.
But it is hottening up in the Championship. With Hull City 2, Huddersfield 0. Hull are 3 points off the top in fourth. That means Palace, who dropped points away at Birmingham,
the Wardrobe scored in that game.
Oh,
yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, Papa Bouba Diop. Yeah. I thought
that annoys me because he didn't score a single goal for Portsmouth within about four seasons.
Yeah.
Scored his debut. Was that his debut? I think it might have been his full debut.
I'm not sure.
And Kenwyn Jones scored at the weekend as well.
First in about 450 games. Yeah.
That's right. Birmingham.
I don't think Jones has played much, to be fair to him.
No,
we're in the Championship
as well. No, we'll go back to the Prem.
All right,
top titties.
We've promoted ourselves.
Birmingham, funny season, haven't they? They've been doing okay at the start. They're way down in 19th. No good for the second city. Middlesbrough beat Wolves 2-0. Borough keeping up the pressure on Cardiff. They're in third, 41 points. So
did you see the post-match interview with Solbakken? And he was pissed off, like,
was he?
Believe.
Oh, yeah,
and he's a man with a bloody pacemaker as well. I would not want to anger that man.
But you can imagine him getting angry at every little thing. He's the type of guy. He's never. He's the type of guy who doesn't experience happy emotions. Sort of normal, average. It's like there's an awful lot of room down the board.
There's a hint of the T1000 about him, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah.
he's not doing that well. Henning Berg's not doing very well. I think he's won one game at Blackburn.
Same as Redknapp.
He didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Let's go to League One, where Tranmere drew 0-0 with Sheffield United.
This is the one we've all been waiting for, isn't it?
Yeah. And a big win for Coventry away to Doncaster 4-1, which is quite surprising. But 6 points separate first and tenth in League One, which is absolutely staggering, making it the most exciting league below the Championship in all of England.
But in tenth, that 6 points off the top are Creepy Crawley, who are about to be turned over big time on Boxing Day by Pompey at Fram.
Pompey. How Pompey getting on?
Rubs.
Yeah.
Absolutely shit.
I didn't look like intense.
They got a 10 point deduction in the post as well. Okay. We come out of admin, so that would be.
Does that happen every year, Neil?
Yes, yeah. I told you it's a golf handicap.
Yeah. Before we go abroad, let's talk about Bradford City, who knocked Arsenal out in the quarterfinal of the League Cup. They've invited Diana Ross to the club for some penalty training after their penalty shootout win against Arsenal.
Gracious
winners.
Yeah.
Gracious winners.
Is this some kind of PR stunt?
Yeah. Looked to me like a PR stunt by the Capital One Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, let's be honest, is never going to catch on.
The Capital One Cup.
Jim, any thoughts on the quarterfinal?
I don't even know what you're talking about. I've just given up.
To the league, Jim.
Let's go to the league.
In Spain.
It's warmer there.
Where Real Madrid have lost the league. They drew at home with Espanyol 2-2. And that's it, Jose said, pretty much, didn't he?
So are they just not going to play their other games?
Yeah, well, I don't see the point. He confronted a journalist after...
I heard about this.
Yeah, the journalist said...
But wasn't it like they locked the guy in a room? Like six Real Madrid officials and Jose Mourinho?
Yeah.
Or am I just making that up?
And the Emperor and Darth Vader.
And King Kong. There was a radio host. Well, I just thought I'd spice it up a bit.
Adding a giant ape.
He's got that big griller in it. Can't move.
Hottening it up a bit.
Yeah.
He gets results, though.
Stinks of bananas.
A radio host in Spain, he said the goalkeeper coach at Real Madrid apparently listens in to the players' conversations in the dressing room and reports back to Jose. And Jose was like, that's not what happens, and if it did, it's none of your business.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Sorry, can you say that again? No, okay. Yeah. Popping a bit.
But it was Madrid versus the city of Barcelona all round, because Barcelona beat Atletico Madrid 4-1, Messi up to 90 goals for the year. But what a goal from Falcao to get it going.
Big balls.
And they played well at Atleti.
Yeah, well, they didn't Falcao hit the post after about 8 or 9 minutes? Yeah. And then you thought, he's on.
I had them on those ropes. And then Adriano scored an absolute beauty.
Indeed. What I find really interesting, it's becoming clearer and clearer, or this is happening more and more regularly, when if someone scores against either Real Madrid or Barcelona, it tends to be that the balls come over the top and they are absolutely busting a gut to get in behind the defenders and they get that goal. And it seems to be like that's the only way to score against them, just nick a chance. They well, completed
Falcao
football.
Carved them open a few times, but that was definitely the case with the Espanyol goal, the first goal, I think, where he rifled it.
See, even in Europe, with Barcelona in particular.
But the Adriano goal was like, you could just see both of them, they doubled up on him. Like, turn him on the other side, stop the cross. Well, I can't believe he's done that. You'd be so annoyed if you were a fullback there.
I don't even know what position this guy plays in. I don't think anyone does. How has he done this?
Yeah. It's one of those glorious goals that dips. He's hit it higher and wider than the goal. Mm.
Yeah, it's come in. Yeah, it's come in.
Just in the nick of time, Jim.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing.
But even, I mean, it's come to something when even the second best team in the league, Atletico Madrid, can't maintain any sort of intensity against Barcelona. Yeah. It's hard at the Nou Camp, I know, and we all know that. But they started off really, really well. And if Falcao put that chance away where he hit the post, the inside of the post, if they'd gone 2-0 up, it might have been a different story.
No, it's not been a game this season so far where Messi's only scored once.
That's right, he scored
two or three.
He was at fault for the first for the Atletico Madrid goal, wasn't he? He got robbed of possession.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah.
He's peaked.
Get him on the national team.
But he's got 90 for the year, but there are claims from Zambia that it's not his record anymore. Or not anymore, sorry. Back in the day, Godfrey Chitalu has the record for the most goals in a calendar year. Yeah. Not Messi. 107, I think it was. This guy was one of the players that died in that Zambian plane crash off the coast of Western Africa. Mm. But yeah, that's what they claim. I mean, to be honest, I would question Zambian goal scoring records.
But I would question the quality in the league compared to who Messi scored against, I suppose.
Yeah. So there you go, people.
FIFA have kind of refused to ratify either record, so they're not.
Yeah. They've knocked off for Christmas.
They've binned Later. Off Bin Hammam. That's their done. That's their work done for Christmas now. Yeah.
There we go. Let's go to league. PSG are top on goal difference. Yeah. With Lyon and Marseille on 35 points. So they beat Lyon 1-0. Great win. Do you hear Zlatan was kicking off because apparently they wouldn't let him park in a place that was reserved for technical staff.
In a fountain.
What?
Yeah.
What? Were they at park the there?
Yeah.
I'm on the side on this one.
Yeah.
That's fucking poor.
Technical staff. What does that mean? Like referees and stuff? Or?
No, I think it was at the club, I think.
Just means coaches, probably, I suppose. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I assume other players get their own parking space, do they? Mm. He probably just drove two cars in that day.
Yeah.
Something like
he just wanted to test the rules. Like, what rule have I not broken? What's the pettiest thing I can find?
I don't know, Jim. You threw me there because I was thinking, how are we going to link this to South America? Let's go to South America.
Spotless.
Good one, mate.
The Copa Americana was abandoned between Sao Paulo and Tigre from Argentina. It was the second leg, and Sao Paulo were quite comfortably in front. Until all hell broke loose, there was a bit of a brawl. Tigre said that police pulled guns on their players after the brawl, and then they refused to continue the match after said brawl happened, and they were in the dressing room for about 3 hours or something like that. So the game was given to Sao Paulo.
But they celebrated it like it was a legitimate win, though.
Yeah, they did, yeah. Well, the Sao Paulo president, Juvenal Juvencio, said they were going to lose by a big score. Our biggest victory is the fact that the Argentinians ran away.
I mean, anywhere else in the world, you think, yeah, this won't be the end of this. This will be investigated. I'm fairly confident this is the end of this.
Yeah. That was Lucas Moura's last game for Sao Paulo before he goes to PSG. Bit different.
Went out with a bang.
Yeah.
I mean, there are stories of like previous games where police have used like tear gas on players on the pitch during
I've definitely seen this player in South America be sent off and refuse to go, and the police have come off and arrested him to get him off the pitch. I've seen that happen. Imagine if that happened here.
you simply can't.
Yeah.
Mm. Whenever I hear Tigre, I always think of Le Tigre, the band.
Yeah.
TKO, hearing on the radio. Remember those guys?
Yeah. Decepticon.
Decepticon.
Shall I tell you about Dunga?
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's been appointed the coach of Internacional, his first job since Brazil in 2010. He said the Internacional job is like the Brazil job. You do not go when you want, you go when you are called. It's like any job, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like jury service.
Yeah. He started and ended his career at Internacional, didn't he? Old Dopey.
Dopey Dopes. Yeah. Nice to see him back, do you think?
Oh, I'd love to see a roll neck if he's going to bring a roll neck out.
And his military haircut.
Yeah.
Doesn't his daughter design his clothes?
Mm.
Yeah. She'll have a new range out. That's probably what this is all about.
We talked about that quite in detail during the World Cup, didn't we? Yeah. That was like one of our tactical analyses of one of the Brazil games. Dopey Dunga's daughter.
That doesn't sound like the football ramble.
Yeah.
Dungarees are. I'm a man who puts a lot of stock in how managers dress themselves, and Dunga is an appallingly dressed man. Yeah. He wears like shoes far too big for him.
He
like,
has to.
Cords.
He's trying to be a nice dad.
That's true. Yeah, cords and a roll neck, massive roll neck.
Surprised he doesn't have like a really bad picture like pinned to his back, like you would stick it on a fridge. Like of like a house.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe his daughter's getting back at him for like spending loads of time away in her childhood and stuff.
Colombia. Lovely story coming out of Colombia.
Oh, Colombia.
Oh, yes. Freddie Rincon.
Not often you say that.
Remember Freddie Rincon, Jim?
Yeah, from a long time ago.
Time ago. He's 46 now. That's why it was a long time. He's come out of retirement.
What?
Yeah, the former Napoli and Real Madrid man who scored one of my favourite World Cup goals ever against West Germany in 1990. Retired in 2004, finishing at Corinthians in Brazil. Got 84 international caps with a club. He's coming out of retirement.
I
got a club.
Yeah, he does.
I like Freddie Rincon. I think he's going back to the club he played his best years at. Club America or something like that. I like Freddie Rincon, and good midfield player, and World Cup 90 and 94 as well. I sort of do draw a line at former Real Madrid midfield player. I mean, he played like 10 times.
He wasn't much. But
I think he's basically, what he's doing is he's trying to get in the Demon Death Hall of Fame, isn't he? He's trying to get our attention.
Big time.
Get in there.
Him and Valderrama in that midfield. Get Valderrama back out.
What do you think?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Younger.
Which Valderrama, brother?
That's enough.
Let's not go there.
And before we go to Peter's game, we've got to talk about the World Club Cup where Corinthians beat Chelsea 1-0. Gary Cahill was sent off. But the big news from that whole thing for me was that FIFA were charging £24 a programme.
Come on.
Okay. Here we go.
Woo! £24.
Why wouldn't you just round up to 25? Come on. Half a monkey. Is it a monkey?
A monkey's 500.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a pony, is it?
Pony's 250.
Bloody close.
A pony's 50, man.
I thought a monkey was 100.
That's 500.
Doesn't make so little sense to any sort of American or Australian listeners.
Yeah, it's sort of Cockney.
Oh, I like the thing they give you a good slap in the face as well with it. There you go.
Cahill sending off.
Yeah, they didn't really do much. Yeah. No. Sorry for
the Brazilian, the South American players for Chelsea were gutted, weren't they?
Yeah, Luis was in tears.
I think what was really interesting about that was the way Corinthians celebrated, with the sort of the management just running onto the pitch, everyone going absolutely nuts. I just can't imagine it having been like that if Chelsea had won it. It clearly doesn't mean the same. Reaction to the Corinthians goal was nuts.
Well, I did a bit of reading around it, and they said that for them it's as big as the Libertadores final.
Do you think it's because they are frustrated by the European perception that the South American leagues are inferior?
Yes,
I'd say so. Yeah, it just means so much to them. And Luis was in.
But do you think that's why it means so much?
Because there's a perceived European superiority, basically. Mm. I don't know. I don't know the history behind it. But what I do know is they absolutely love it.
They take it more seriously. But what I did like, actually, when Barcelona were in the finals...
Do you
finals,
think it's because it's a game of football?
Yeah, which is...
And that's how they react to any game of football.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, what I liked about when Barcelona played, they took it seriously. When Barcelona beat Estudiantes 2-1, Messi scored after extra time. You know, they celebrated.
Oh, of course.
They beat Santos as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
4-0.
Quite easily, yeah.
And Pele didn't come on.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise it'd been 4-1.
Right, clearly they don't take it that seriously.
Well, I don't think so. And we're going to go to Pete's game after this.
Good news, Ramblers. We have a betting partner. And our betting partner, William Hill, are offering to match any sporting bet from £10 to £25 when you, a listener to the Football Ramble, open a new William Hill sports account. Go to thefootballramble.com/William Hill to find out more and claim your free bet now.
I ran out of names for quizzes. Thank you to all of you that got in touch and also chatted to me at the Football Ramble drinks at the weekend, who suggested like a million ones that I forgot instantly. Chris Pryor did email me with Quinn Hughes or Law. Win, lose or draw.
Nice.
Strong.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
Mark. Yeah. That's stronger than anyone I've ever done.
That is economical writing.
Yeah, Quinn Hughes or Law is very good.
Very good. Are we using that one?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's go then.
I was and am Dutch.
Stop. Pierre Van Hooijdonk.
No, not Pierre Van Hooijdonk.
God, I was on a Casiraghi roll.
39 appearances from my Premier League club, 39 games and one goal, that
Stop.
Is.
Stop. Winston Bogard.
No.
Ah.
Lovely.
Stop. Glenn Helder.
Ah, yes! Jimbo.
Mother...
Easy.
Well done, mate.
I played in Dennis Bergkamp's last ever game. In 1999, I had terrible problems relating to compulsive gambling. I continue to gamble, and I have represented the Netherlands in various poker tournaments. A psychological investigation once concluded that I suffer from a narcissistic personality disorder with hints of borderline.
Is this just you now?
I myself disagree with this conclusion.
He's a drummer in a band, Glenn Helder.
Is he?
Yeah, he's well into his drums.
You're not getting confused with Matt Helder's Arctic Monkeys drummer fame.
No, definitely not.
Could be related.
They're not.
No, you never know.
They've got different surnames.
Correspondence time, is it?
Yes, yeah. It is. Go on then, Lukey. I'm back now, so I've done this correspondence thing again.
Hurry up then.
Because you don't talk enough.
The question this week was...
Luke's dead.
He didn't like that.
Oh, he didn't like that one.
Because he's alive.
I am here. The question this week was, what should Pep Guardiola do now he's, you know, for his next job, basically? And I'll ask you guys to have a think about it as well, so maybe you could chip in at some point. The first answer, Pete, you'll be pleased to know, from Richard Cook, was replace Luke on the ramble because he's dead.
Oh,
still right when we do it.
Exactly.
We have to port with you.
Don't even know me. Marky Thomas very personally says Jamie Redknapp should worry about his M&S contract.
Oh yeah,
Come on, if there's one man who rocks a suit better than Redknapp, it's Big Pep.
Not just that, a nice little soft cardigan as well. He likes a cardigan, likes a jumper, likes a V-neck.
Conan says he should run a shop smelling. Conan says he should run a shop selling small ornamental curios, which he would then call bric-a-bracca tiki-taka.
Ah, yeah, I like that.
Warren Sony says he should be an architect. He's already got the polo neck jumper collection. Just add spectacles and a Saab.
Excellent.
I like that.
Ben McAleer says Christmas temping in retail. He loves his short-term contract, so it would be perfect. practically thinking.
I'm glad you're back now, Luke. Half an hour at the show.
Ray Bradshaw would like him to take Joseph Desiree's job for a Pizza Hut buffet.
What? That's...
Is it like...
not really a job, is it?
Oh, the next job.
Right,
okay. Right. And Zhao says he should be Udinese's replacement fan in case the one they've got can't make it to the next away.
Oh, Udinese.
Anthony Scully, who I don't know really how he gets through the day, chips in with, doesn't matter what job he takes, he'll get sacked after a year. I could have managed Barcelona with that team. Some prick is managing them now and they're going to walk the Spanish league.
He sounds fun.
Anthony Scully, then.
Business Scully, we call him.
But yeah, well...
Skull diggery going on there.
Another question like that next week.
Yeah, excellent.
Anthony Scully, eh?
Thanks for that, people.
Scullo.
One of Britain's finest young minds. Polymath.
That's actually what you wrote on your Twitter profile.
Yeah.
Noi.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. Oh, yes, it is. Damn it all. Are we going back? We're going back a long way with this one. We're going for one of the most important men in the history of Italian football. It's William Garbutt.
All right. Tell us more.
I will have to. Otherwise,
as if we haven't independently researched him.
Is he related to Vin Garbutt, the Teesside folk singer?
Uh-huh. And then he comes to the Demon Dance Hall of
Fame. That's all you need.
He was born on the 9th of January, 1883.
Oh... 84 years before the Summer of Love.
Top maths.
Goodness me.
If that is
Polymath.
Correct.
Yeah.
We never check his workings out.
Yeah.
He actually died before the Summer of Love.
Depressing.
I've ruined the big finale.
Surprised that it went ahead.
Stop it. Yeah. Close the Demon Dance Hall of Fame forever. This is too
Burn
sad.
It down.
Do you reckon that's what he said on his deathbed? I thought he made the Summer of Love.
I know it's coming as well.
Yeah.
I could smell the hippies.
Feel it in my elbow.
Oh. Now then. The origins of Italian football, or calcio, as they call it, feature a large number of Englishmen, damn it all.
James Richardson.
Well, you're not far off, Jim, with that, but more on that in just a moment. One of the most important of these Englishmen, and touted by many as the first manager in the history of Italian football, is William Garbutt. Now, he was born, as I said, in 1883. He joined the Royal Artillery as a young man, but would soon be playing football. So he had a proper career before becoming a manager. And he was a decent player, turned out for Reading, Woolwich, Arsenal and Blackburn. Represented the English League in a match against the Scottish League back in the day, which was very big business, considering that international football really hadn't gotten underway.
Injury put a stop to his playing career at the age of 29. Now, in the meantime, football was spreading in Italy, mostly due to English sailors and travellers and whatnot who had passed by Italy. And he moved to Genoa to work on the docks to make a bit of money for his family. That was a very active dock, and a bit of money to be made there. Mm. And the city port was very busy, and this helped football to grow there, Genoa.
It's a very unusual just life move, isn't it?
It is,
isn't
it?
So strange now.
But you think of in the 80s, manual labours in England going to Germany.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Auf Wiedersehen, Pep. Auf Wiedersehen, Pep.
Bringing Pete into the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm walking up. What?
Pete, you're a manual labourer. What do you think about it?
Can you imagine sort of like being in a country that's like not really heard of football?
Yeah, I know.
And trying to have a game.
It's
crazy. Oh, should we play football? What's football? Yeah. Oh, I'll show you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a dance ensues. And a musical number.
Well, it's kind of his the but case, though. Not without the other
bit. You'd be teaching people the rules, and then you go, oh, was that a goal I just got? And you're like, no.
No. Yeah. No, I score the goals. You guys haven't learned to do them yet.
An hour after it, who would you say is the best player here? Yeah, still me.
So, Genoa soon had a football team, or a sports club, really. When the club actually first formed, they had a rule. I mean, this is just so bloody English back in the day. They had a rule that no Italians could be members.
Yeah.
It's a shocking behaviour, isn't it? Which is one of the reasons why cricket became quite popular amongst the locals at the time. Now this is
very nearly the beginning of Italian cricket. This profile is it a very defensive game?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very low scoring runs and all that kind of stuff. Now this was all really until a man called James Richardson Spenceley.
I don't even want to think how corrupt Italian cricket would be. Holy shit!
Italian boxing. Let's not even go there.
Yeah. James Richardson Spenceley came along and changed all that, along with Garber. He's one of the most important figures in the early development of the game. Spenceley opened the door for Italians to play for Genoa and was quick to turn them into the dominant side, winning a number of championships in the league's early form. Now Spenceley, sadly on World War I duty, died, but a couple of years later Garber arrived in Genoa and would carry on his great work. And it's a strange one with Spenceley because it's kind of unclear what his role was at Genoa. Mm. If you look at his record, he played from 1897 or something like that to 1908 or whatever it was. I can't quite remember. But it also said he kind of managed them at that time. But in Italian football back then, they didn't really have managers. So I suppose he was just the gobbiest one or something. I don't know, or the one who knew how to play the game or whatever it was. So he was a player, but as I say, kind of a manager as well, but not officially. So when Garbutt came along, he officially became the first manager in the club's history. And many people say he was the first manager in the history of calcio, the Italian game. And he revolutionised Genoa, quickly introduced different approaches to training with the emphasis on tactics and physical fitness. Now, Italy's quite well known for its tactical innovations throughout the years, and still, you could argue. But he was one of the first to get that process underway. And even little things, you know, some reports say that he installed hot showers into the dressing rooms, you know, which was kind of unheard of. He also introduced paid transfers to Italy. That was unheard of as well back then.
As in, pay me.
Yes,
yeah. Transfer.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Bungs.
Yeah.
No, not at all. So, also the first time an Italian played abroad was Genoa when they went to play his old side Reading back in England.
Well, I often wonder when Garbutt is the first guy who goes to Italy, starts this football team in Genoa. It's almost like it's pointless because
Spenceley was the first one, but Garbutt took them to.
But who are they going to play?
Well,
they have to wait for another team to start. It's like when they say the first ever station on the London Underground was Baker Street. Well, where's it going?
Mm. Yeah, well, but
presumably
they had
a plan to build others.
Well, I suppose so.
It's just the one they finished first.
Hang on, they weren't the first club. He was the first manager.
Right, okay.
So there were other clubs. There was a league there. So because Spenceley won the title a number of times with Genoa. But when he left, they'd gone a few years without winning the league. So when Garbutt turned up and put these training regimes in and whatnot, he revolutionised the team, and then they started winning championships. I think he won three while he was there. The last one coming in 1924, which was the last time Genoa won a championship.
Is it really?
Yeah, 1924. Right. But despite that, thanks to Spencer and Garbutt, Genoa will have won 9 championships, I think that's right, which is only bettered by Milan, Inter and Juventus.
But they haven't won one since 24.
No, which shows you how dominant and how important these guys were back in the day. Yeah,
knew their kit was good.
Yeah, exactly. In 1927, he became the first manager in Roma's history. He won them the cup there. He was there for a couple of years. They moved on to Napoli. He wasn't their first one, though. That had already been done. His success wasn't limited to Italy. In 1935, he... went to Athletic Bilbao and won the Spanish Championship, beating Real Madrid to the title, quite sensationally. But due to the Spanish Civil War breaking out, he moved back to Italy with Milan. He wasn't at Milan very long, and then he was back at his beloved Genoa. World War II broke out. And it's so funny with managers back in the day, because... you know, the breakouts of war and all the rest of it had such an effect on their careers, obviously.
Yeah, and so, your job has very little uses.
Yeah, exactly. Combat. So, for obvious reasons, took a break from Italian football, but was back at Genoa in 1946 when the club weren't in such a good way, and finished managing the club in 1948. He's still very highly revered in Genoa and parts of Italy. He was nicknamed Il Mister, the Mister, because obviously that's what he would have everybody call him.
And he was a very sickly man.
He was. And so... very good, Jim. Still, players to this day in Italy call their manager Mister because of him.
That's brilliant.
Which is incredible.
So I suppose it's something like Gaffer. I suppose. Who knows where that came from? It's one of those Gaffer things that's gone into the language. Gaffer tape.
I hope so. I hope not.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you on that.
But when he died in England, it wasn't reported on at all because nobody really knew him. But in Italy, it was almost like a day of mourning. Right. He was so popular there and so well known, and they're so grateful for him. And as I say, Spencer as well, but it's Garbutt's profile. What an amazing man, and is such an important figure in the history of the Italian game. And he's coming into the team with
us.
Without him, there's no way Italy would have battered us in the quarterfinal of Euro.
Exactly. Well, that's the end of the show, kids. I hope you had a nice time. If you want to email us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble, and the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yeah, and thanks to everyone who came to the Ramble drinks for Christmas on the 15th. It was a lot of fun. Great to see so many smiling faces, so many Ramble t-shirts as well. Thanks.
I had a proper laugh.
And this is the last show of the year.
Yeah.
Due to the calendar, we won't be here recording next week. It's Christmas Eve.
We have no control over the calendar.
And then it's New Year's Eve.
Well, sadly, the Mayans do. So this is the last show ever.
Oh.
Because end of the world on Friday.
Is that right?
So, yeah.
Shall we have a kiss?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
Blame the Mayans, blame the calendar.
So we'll be back about the 7th of Jan or something like that.
So have a Merry Christmas. Say goodbye,
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, goodbye.
Pete.
Laters.
And Luke.
Goodbye.
And what Jim said. Have a good one, people. See you in 2013.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.